Welcome to Attached, a platform for adding breadth and depth to everyday living. I'm Yaakov Danishevsky, and this is the conversation series focused on my book. In each episode, I invite a special guest to discuss the topic of a particular chapter and how it relates to our lives. Welcome to the first of the Attached Conversations series, where we'll be discussing a chapter of the book at a time, using that chapter's topic as a springboard for a conversation with unique guests that I'll have the opportunity to have conversations with. So with me to have the first conversation is Rabbi Shlomo Katz, coming in from Israel via video. Thank you so much for being here and spending this time with me to have this first conversation I'm very excited about.
So am I. It's my honor, Rabbi Yaakov. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So let me just introduce the topic that we'll discuss briefly and what I write about in the first chapter called Basic Needs. And then I'll ask Rabbi Shlomo to share some thoughts or reflections, and we'll have a conversation together about it. So the first chapter is called Basic Needs, where what I talk about is that typically, historically, for a long time, there's been this concept of what's known as Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which in many ways actually still reigns supreme in some sense in our society, whether that's organizationally, societally, culturally, educationally, or within a person's own development of their life. So what Maslow claims, Abraham Maslow, who had amazing contributions to the field, although I'm going to disagree with him on this point, what Abraham Maslow claims is that a person's basic needs, their most fundamental and essential needs, are food, shelter, warmth, and clothing, and physical safety, things of those sort. Once a person attains those things, they can then move and look to develop relationships in their lives. And then when a person has relationships, they can move on to morality and creativity, and they can eventually move to self-actualization. The point of chapter one in the book is to talk about how actually there's a mistake there, because relationships are as basic and essential of a human need as food and warmth and clothing. We need relationships. Our body, our system, our whole being cannot survive, and actually doesn't even have any interest in surviving, if we don't have connections, if we don't have relationships with other people. And when I say relationship, what I mean is something very difficult to define or to describe in a particularly specific way. But relationships meaning the experience of being in a shared bond or attachment with another person, the experience of seeing another person and feeling seen by them, knowing another person and being known by them, feeling that there's a shared experience together with this other person. And part of what that means, really going down deeply into it, is that the relationship is not for the sake of you getting something out of me or me getting something out of you. It's the relationship for the sake of relationship. It's I'm in connection with you because I'm in connection with you. I'm simply sharing this experience together with you. And that is one of our most essential needs. And as the chapter ends, that is going to take us deeply into what I think relationship with Hashem is about. Relationship with Hashem, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what God offers us, is a relationship of that sort, of that nature, everywhere and anywhere and always. So before we get to the piece about bringing God and a spiritual relationship into it, curious to turn this over to hear what this brings up for Rabbi Shlomo Katz, who is here. And I'll just introduce Rabbi Shlomo by saying that the reason that I specifically wanted to ask Rabbi Shlomo to join me for this conversation is because Rabbi Shlomo and I don't know each other extensively in a quantitative way, but qualitatively, I feel very close. Because I think that Rav Shlomo is the type of person who really, there's something about you that just creates the experience that I just described, that kind of relationship. We haven't spent large amounts of time together, but your music, in the music itself that I've listened to and davened with and lived with for many, many years, the music brings out the type of experience that I was just describing. And then being at a concert of yours a number of times, the energy of the concert, of the experience there, is the type of experience I was just describing. And then in the past few years, I had the opportunity and the privilege to sit with you in a smaller Fabrengian type style late at night, one winter evening in Chicago in someone's office and got to know you a little bit more. And there's something about you that just really very naturally just creates that type of experience for whoever you're with. I could say for myself personally, of just feeling like there's a bond, there's a shared experience that goes deeper than what I can do for you or what you can do for me, but it's simply just the fact that we're connecting. We're just connecting. So curious what this all brings up for you.
Wow. It brings up my childhood. It brings up relationships that I'm in currently. It touches upon the core about just about anything that's actually meaningful and monumental in life. I think the first thing that it brought up instantly was, it sounded so familiar. I was trying to understand what the theme of this chapter was leading me to. And it brought me to the opening of a podcast of a dear friend of mine, a teacher of mine, David Sacks. I'm not sure if you know him in Los Angeles.
No.
David's an incredible, he has a podcast called Spiritual Tools for an Outrageous World. It's really out there. David's an Emmy Award winning writer, as well as a chassid. And the opening of the podcast goes like this. He says, every week we do couples therapy between us and God. And it's a chance to deepen and explore the most important relationship that we have. So it brought to notion this concept of being in a relationship with Hashem, with God, is actually much closer in its core to the relationships that we have with other people, which should not be about what am I getting out of this, but rather, am I in it, Bichla? Am I even in it or not? And that's something that, as much as I know that to be the proper way to look at it, it's something I still struggle with all the time. As much as I'm happy about the fact that I could say I'm in a relationship with God, where's the expectance? Where does it pop up? Do I catch myself when there's this expectance that comes out of a geshmak, a good prayer session, or good, charity, or just being a mensch, and calling myself, having enough guts to call myself out on it, but not in a disciplinary way, just in a just with a heightened state of consciousness and awareness. So it really drew out for me something you gave words, I would say, like this in this first chapter, you gave words to a lot of emotions in my heart, and you did it in such a magnificent way. And I'm just very, very excited. I just want to say at the start here, I'm very excited for many people that are going to finally find the words that they didn't know, they didn't really have the ability to express, and you gave them. You gave them a lot of the ability to express what's going on in the neshama and the soul.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So you mentioned that this is something that you feel connected to, but still struggle with, which I think is normal. I think that's the camp that hopefully most of us are in. To still be struggling with that, at least, is already a certain level of achievement. So I'm curious for you, maybe there are, were there times in your life where you were more or less connected to being able to connect with other people or with Hashem in a way that is more focused on the experience and less on, let's call it, the utilitarian output of it, right? The technical or what I can take from it, but instead it's simply the heyesham, to be there, to be connected. Curious how you bring yourself back to that centered place if something pulls you away, if, to whatever degree you're comfortable sharing about that, what that's like for you personally.
Reb Natan of Breslov, Rabbi Nachman's prime top student, he once said that there's going to come a time that Orthodox religious Jews are going to hear about an era where people practiced what they thought was orthodoxy without hitbodedut, without quieting your mind and speaking to God in your own language. And he said, people are going to crack up. They're going to laugh. They're not going to believe that people actually consider themselves to be religiously law-abiding Jews without that practice. It's like they're going to crack up about it. You know, it's going to be entertaining to them that actually was a thing like that. You know,
It's going to be like imagining what it's like to live without having some sort of, like having a phone or something like that. Like look back and think it's an impossibility. Right, lahav deal. Yeah.
100%. It's my center. It doesn't matter if I'm in a good mood or a bad mood. It doesn't matter what comes out of it. I think one of the key principles in a really good session of one-on-one talk with God in your own language is taking an advice that Rabbi Nachman himself gave, which said, do not have any expectations of what it's supposed to feel like. And he even said that if a person goes into one of these sessions with the intention of crying and they end up crying, they still miss the point. So for me, that's always been what's drawn me, what always brings back the intention that we're speaking of. You know, I will say that from a young age, I was on stage. And you're in a state of giving and giving and giving when you're up there. And as I get older, I still try to sense, where am I just being present when I'm in a state of giving? When can I actually say, I'm actually conversing with you, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the World? And I'll tell you the truth, it's become more and more difficult for me. For me on stage, it's become more and more difficult to not play, to not perform or sing what's anticipated of me, but rather, Veheyesham, where am I here or not? I'm here. I have to trust the flow of what I'm feeling needs to be expressed without the expectation of what the crowd is going to do. And it's truly a minefield because for the soul, because I always looked at it like this, when you're performing, you're basically taking your neshama, you're taking your soul, and you're putting it on display. And if people like what they see, they clap their hands. And if they don't, they'll start talking. What a vulnerable place to put yourself in. But if you really are doing it with the intention of, for the sake of connecting, and that's really what it's about, you want people to connect to your soul and not to a cheap imitation of it. So I'm still, you know, I perform a little bit less these days because now I'm more in communal work. I have a community now. And it shows up there as well in a different manner. But when I do have enough guts to remember what I just said right now, live, I find that clarity really shows up quite fast, even if it's painful, but clarity shows up.
Yeah. For me, it's I really connect with what you're saying. It's kind of a shift that I've tried to make also. I don't have concerts or any stage of that sort, but even just in speaking at a Friday night minion that I'm somehow the weekly speaker at, and I used to kind of come in with a prepared very short Dvar Torah or something to say. And I kind of stopped doing that and just tried to wait for whatever was supposed to be said in the moment. And it's challenging because it's nerve-wracking sometimes, right? It's like, is it going to come? Is it going to come? Right. And I've had amazing experiences of something coming and something that felt like this is what needed to be said, or I had an idea of what I was going to say, and then literally the last second something else comes in. It's like, no, this is what's supposed to be said. But then it can be really nerve-wracking. There's almost like a leap of faith to just kind of wait it out and wait it out and wait it out. And then that creates its own tension, because then it's like, well, man, I'm not really here because I'm kind of just anticipating something. So it creates this whole kind of craziness, right, to try and figure out how to settle in.
Absolutely. You, on the one hand, you want to honor the moment by preparing, but on the other hand, you want to really honor the moment by being present. And it's a little bit of a, not a little bit, there could be a lot of tension there. I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I totally relate to that. Yeah, definitely.
So I'm curious, you mentioned being on stage and when you're live, the struggle, the tension that exists with that. What about behind stage, in the sense that I know for myself, even in trying to start doing this or putting out a book, there's a lot of connecting with other people and networking and trying to angle and get into this place or this position or have this person endorse you or something of that nature. And it, and for me at least, I know that that has at times profoundly pulled me away from everything that we're talking about right now. So I imagine that that exists for anyone and everyone in whatever industry they're in. So for me, I'm talking about writing a book or being a therapist or speaking as a rabbi. I would imagine that exists a lot in the music industry, and I would imagine it exists for anyone in whatever field, profession, or area of life they're pursuing.
Oh, it does. And when we catch ourselves falling into that trap, it's, I would say, a great idea to not fall into deep, dark depression, because you start to sense, you start to get this bitter taste of your own self-image that you've kind of, I would say, falsely exposed the world to. But really, you did it, you do it to yourself, and we fall into that all the time. You know, the notion of this, that word to that person who likes that will lead me to that and get me there. And, you know, even if it does, we still feel empty after a sense of what we thought would have provided a tremendous amount of accomplishment.
Yeah.
And I think that the greatest gift that one can truly give themselves is the permission to believe that what God thought of you when he created you is what the people that you need to connect to will connect to.
Can you say that again, actually? That sounded really
important. I think the permission to go into the greatest architect that ever existed, the mind of all minds, the will of all wills, the master of the world, and his image and the vision of what he thought of when creating you is eventually, and if you follow that sound and that voice, then you will end up connecting to the other pieces of godliness that have been, placed all over the world, and those pieces of godliness will attach themselves together because it's the most natural. I'm thinking in Hebrew a little bit just because I live here and I've been here for so many years. It's the most natural meshicha. How would you say?
Pulling or instinct or?
Yeah, attraction.
Attraction.
It's a natural attraction. It's almost like gravity, literally. Mm-hmm. There's some work that needs to be done there, and that is, okay, that's a great teaching, but what did God have in mind when he thought of me? And I go back to the beginning, without some like dedicated moments of hitbodedut, of sitting alone with God and speaking in your own language, asking these questions, I don't really know in today's day and age, with all the distractions that we have, how it's possible to know. Let's say I buy into that. I'm going to be myself. And then after you figure it out that that's what you want to do, because that's the safest and most guaranteed way of living the same life. The problem is, I'm 20, I'm 40, I'm 80. Do I even know what that is? Do I know what that true me is really is? And it's evolving as we speak as well. So you need to get at least for me, I need to get some sense of quiet in order to remember. And then and move forward from there. But I'm sure you see it. I mean, when people come in to receive counsel from you, and they sit in the chair or however, whatever form of therapy it is given, I'm sure you also see yourself as, okay, this is probably, I know this will be a good thing for them to hear, versus what do I really feel right now that maybe they don't want to hear right now? I mean, does that ever show up for you?
Yeah, there's a constant kind of tension, again, going back to that, or pull in two directions of if this is what you mean, if I'm connecting to what you're bringing up, that on the one hand, there's a piece of saying what will feel good to the person to feel comfortable in that moment. Right. And on the other hand, there's an importance of saying things that a person sometimes needs to hear that other people in their life might not be in the position or might not be appropriate, might not be able to say to them. And that balance, that tightrope walk is I would say, at the core of one of the most challenging parts of therapy as the therapist. And at times, you know, I lean to one side too much, and that creates a problem. And I've made mistakes and lost clients from having leaned too much to the saying something that I felt, and I could have been right, I could have been wrong, but I felt was what needed to be said in that moment. And then on the other hand, feel like I've sometimes not told clients what they need to hear because I leaned too much onto that other side, and that is a definitely an ongoing struggle. And I think part of what helps me engage that in a better way is when I'm able to find a way to not think about it so narrowly, but to step back and make the space where actually both things I would think to say are actually, they're both coming up in this moment because, like you're saying, because they're actually both part of this moment. And so somehow they can coexist. And when I go back to, like, it's not like I'm here to give you something or tell you something, or I have something that you don't have. It's more that there's this shared, almost a shared revelation that's happening together from us just being in connection and relationship with each other. That makes it that the space is big enough for both of those things to exist. Now, I can't say that every single session in the, you know, on a Thursday at my 3 o'clock session that I do a perfect job with that, right? But my better moments are when I'm able to stay present to that kind of way of relating, as opposed to a more, you know, I'm the therapist and they're the client and I have something to give them and tell them. No. But there's this shared experience of a relationship. We're in a relationship and we're connecting in this moment, me as a person and you as a person and in it together. And that allows more, that there's more space. So it's not so binary. Like, do I say this or do I say that? Right.
Right. You said it so beautifully. There's a shared revelation. Is that the wording you just used?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that showed up in the chapter that I read, but that's such a brilliant approach to the ego. I guess, you know, it's especially people that are in the field of giving, like a teacher, a therapist, a singer, a rabbi, someone that's on the giving end is like, wait a second, no. It's happening. There's a shared revelation. It reminded me of an amazing piece of an inspirational piece of advice that I received from a great rabbi who's basically a therapist. And he said that before anyone comes into his office to seek counsel or ask any type of question, he literally said, he turns to God and he says, Master of the world, just use me right now. Please, they need some good help. Just please use me. Please use me. And then when that, you know, when that notion of like, oh, wow, that's I'm being used. And then there's a revelation that, wow, it's such a powerful connection.
Yeah.
Much more than just being on a giving or a receiving end, but being on a partnership, on a team, in a relationship that the extent of the revelation is only as potent as the connection between two souls at that moment.
Yeah. So you mentioned also before that now you're a little bit more in the role. I think a lot of people know you for the music. A lot of people know you in different ways: the music, the Torah, the community. So now you're more in a community emphasis role. I'm curious to hear more about that. How do you bring this notion, this essential notion of relationships, and relationships for the sake of relationship, and even before getting to the piece about God or Hashem, just people to people, you know, connecting with each other in a way of really sharing an experience together, feeling seen and seeing others. How do you bring that into the community that you lead? Because I've never been there, but I've always excuse me, I've always heard such amazing things about the warmth and the connection that exists in your community. I'm sure that you bring this piece into it.
Well, we are approximately like 100 and it's by now about 145 families now. And it's really a full-time privilege. And it's very, very, it's much larger than anything I ever imagined. that constant notion of warmth and of closeness doesn't just happen. It's intentional. It's very intentional. I think that people, like you said, they want to feel seen and they want to feel heard. And what I try to do, and I still, hopefully I'll have many more years of perfecting it, is that I want to give people the tools to understand that they first need to hear and see themselves. I know you want to be heard, but what is it that you want people to hear? Don't you want people to hear the real you? And I believe that the real us comes from the combination of praying and learning, and then praying what you learned. I think that is an answer to the initial question we had about like how do you get to know the real you? So the chevre here are really, it's a bunch of families that understood that it was time to come home, to move to Eretz Yisrael, but the real work only starts once you come home to Eretz Yisrael. And that warmth and that closeness, that Baruch Hashem, thank God, people feel amongst each other, and they do, is because people are vulnerable enough to share some of the stuff that they wouldn't normally share. It's definitely like that here,
Wow.
and I think that my role is a little bit different because I have my tzaddikim and friends outside of the community for that. That's not the role as a rabbi or leader of the community to do that amongst his congregants. By some people, they may think it is. I don't feel like that. I'm definitely the fountain that you and I both share drinking from. Doesn't really portray that type of role in
Yeah.
mitzvah, the rabbi, but it's definitely a community of relationships. And that's why I was so excited to see this book. I mean, it's definitely a community of relationships of not asking, to sound very corny, but to quote JFK, not to see what you can get out of your community, but
Yeah.
to really feel present and alive as someone that is carrying a torch of connection within a community. So on that note, just to sound a little bit commercial, come for Shabbos, come join us, come taste it, because that's what we're trying to be conscious of every day.
Amazing. Amazing. And I think what you're bringing up also is something that is very near and dear to me in this whole parsha, this whole sugya, this whole area, which is I feel very passionate about the importance of relationships and what we're talking about, of feeling seen, feeling heard, feeling connected. At the same time, I always have a concern that some of this language and some of this way of speaking can lead to a certain type of self-absorption and egocentric focus, right? Where it becomes about me and what I need and what I feel and what I want to say, and a lot of this language can kind of lead towards that when it's seen in kind of a surface way. So, but what you brought up then at the same time was, this piece of contributing and giving to others, and I don't know, it's a tricky topic because I do think there's pieces of this. There's actually, interestingly, there's studies that have shown, I'm not sure the full validity or, how peer reviewed it is, et cetera, but there is indications to the notion that some of the mindfulness practices and some of this kind of language has actually led to more antisocial behavior because people can become more self, just internalized to the self, right? Which is where I think the Hespodidus that you're bringing up and the community piece is so important because even in Hespodidus, which is this piece that Reb Shlomo is talking about of spending time by yourself and quieting things, but all of that is still done in relationship. And I think that's one of the unique things about within Judaism. Because it's always done in a relationship. In the context of Hispodus, it's relationship with Hashem. But it's between you and God. So you're still speaking to another. There's another that you're focused on. So it's a focus on self, but that focus on self is intertwined with a focus on another being. And in what you're talking about now in the context of community, it's I'm being vulnerable with what I want to contribute and I want to feel heard and what I want to say. But I'm doing that within the context of a community, and there's a larger community that I'm doing that within. It's not just me for my sake and my kind of isolated isolated way.
What you're bringing up is fascinating to me because I've been a chassid of Jon Kabat-Zinn for many, many years.
Yeah.
He's the one who created the whole world of mindfulness meditation and the one who basically constructed the first stress reduction clinics in Boston. And he's done amazing, amazing work over the years. And I always wanted to ask him if he thought, or to ask him, what would it look like to create a mindfulness shul? He's Jewish, so he would, you know, to create a mindfulness synagogue. Like, what does that mean? Because the whole point of synagogue is that it is this concept of getting out of your own trip. Mm-hmm. You're part of something bigger. But yeah. Mindfulness is actually doing, to a certain extent, exactly the danger that you brought up.
Yeah.
So you're touching, you're really, this is amazing stuff. And these studies fascinate. I see it because I think that authentic Hasidic lifestyle, what the Baal Shem Tov really was drawing us close to, was brought down to the world, was probably the healthiest balance of both. The healthiest balance of both. I think integrating the worlds of Chabad and Breslov specifically, just because the schools of thought basically take us to the notion of the deepest mindfulness in the presence of being part of Am Yisrael, of being part of a bigger picture. When that's there, I think you're bound for a pretty safe and healthy journey.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bringing to mind something I saw in the Shla years ago about a shul, because you're bringing up a mindfulness shul. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, the Shla writes that, because a shul is traditionally called a Beis Knesses, a house of gathering, right? So right. What's the gathering? So if I remember correctly, I think that the Shla writes two explanations. One is that it's a gathering of people, and the other is that it's a gathering between the person and Hashem.
Oh, that's interesting. That's it.
And that captures the tension, right? In that, right? But in both of them, it's not a gathering of me just as me. It's always me mm-hmm. in relation to another. Mm-hmm. So there's a more private and secluded aspect of that when it's me to Hashem, but it still holds on to the fact that it's always me with another, not me just me. And then there's a more communal or public version of me with other, and Knesset as the gathering, hinting to both of those, maybe almost the intentional ambiguity, kind of capturing that tension that you're bringing up.
Wow, there you go. That's wonderful stuff. Yeah. Wow, what a beautiful Torah.
I guess just as a last question, then we'll wrap up. And I thank you just so much for all of this. Is do you think that we're doing well with this relationship piece? Meaning, I always find it like, you know, imagine trying to, what's the elevator pitch for what I'm putting out in this book? That relationships are important. Well, we all know that, don't we? Like, we all know relationships are important. Like, at this point in our society, like, that's a given, right? You know, hospitals used to not let people bring loved ones in for operations or surgery and things like that, right? But that's already, even though in history, that's like, in the grand scheme of history, that was like 5 minutes ago. But in our lived experience, that already feels like ages and ages ago, right? So
right.
We're kind of past that in society, right? So we all know relationships are essential, relationships are important, but there still feels like there's something about this that we don't really get, even though we get it, but we don't really get it.
I want to make sure I understand the question regarding having a relationship with God, or just relationships amongst each other in the communal area. Which one are you referring to?
Yeah. Thank you. Even just amongst each other. Sounds like
I have to believe that I'm trying so hard to be optimistic right now. It's unbelievable. You know what? I have to believe that all I have right now is this moment, right? And if two people, one sitting in Chicago, one is sitting in Efrat in Israel, are using the modes of technology to feel connected. Look at this experience and be like, this is a good experience. I still feel very strongly. It's the reason I kind of chose this path of life right now. as opposed to just the very interesting life of going on a stage from city to city and with masses, is because I personally didn't get a sense that the connections are really being made to the extent that they need to be made. So I think that there's so much work that needs to be done here. I think that the first level that needs to be acknowledged is that people that may know each other for 40, 50 years have no idea who the other person is, and to be vulnerable enough to admit that. But I also know of many, many more groups of people that really feel that the Torah they learned and the davening they've davened isn't satiating their soul, because they need to feel connected. So even though it's a painful process, it is leading them to demand more from the world and to demand more from themselves. So I actually am optimistic about that, because I feel like that's there. That hunger and that thirst is there. It's just, it's a painful process, but it's the beginning of going towards the light. Yeah. And this book is going to, that's why I'm so excited about it, is that this Sefer now is going to be putting the spotlight again on something that they couldn't explain. So many people just haven't found the words to explain. This is what has been causing me to feel empty inside, mm-hmm. or scared, because I have everything and yet I'm so scared because I don't feel like I have anything, because we want connection. We want connection. I just heard Rav Weinberger say last week, putting someone into a palace that has all the most magnificent treasures in the world, besides one thing, and without that one thing, these treasures mean nothing, and that's the light switch to turn on the light, to see what's in front of you. And that's the nekuda here. That's connection.
Yeah.
And that's what, please God, you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're doing it. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem.
Thank you. I'm still meditating on this line from before. I mean, everything you said is really powerful, but believing and giving permission to believe that the image that the master of the world had of me in creating me and in wanting me to be is the image that those that really need to see me will be able to see if I just kind of trust that to happen. That's just really amazing. Thank you. That feels like a shared revelation. For this.
That's not, it's our revelation. It may have come out of my mouth, but it's our experience together that made that to be.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you for spending this time with me.
Gladly, gladly. Lots of love and a big hug till I see you in person.
Same here. Thank you. So much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please follow us on WhatsApp, YouTube, or Instagram. All our podcast series can be found wherever you listen to podcasts. I'd love to hear from you, so please reach out with questions, comments, or suggestions, or to be added to our WhatsApp groups. You can reach us through email using yakov.attached@gmail.com or on WhatsApp at 773-888-2413.